Hiya, Charlotte, compulsive overeater. I was asked this afternoon if I could be a reserve speaker, and I just went, sure, whatever. Like, you don't need a reserve speaker, but yeah, whatever. And I was told about 10 minutes ago, could you do it? So I'm the reserve to the reserve, so you really are getting the bottom of the barrel here. But I went and had a pee and a pray, as somebody in this room told me years ago. And I got my little black book. My little black book I take to conventions and basically whenever I go to an OA gathering, and I write profound, insightful things into here. So I thought, I better go back and see what I did and when I was here. And the very first convention I came to was 2014, where I did a lead chair. I have absolutely no idea what I talked about. No idea. Then I flicked through and I wrote a manifesto for myself in 2014. So there must have been a brilliant workshop. And my manifesto says, I can't eat, insert my main binge food, which I'm not going to say out loud in case it triggers anybody, full stop. My relationship with food can't become the most important one. That would be ridiculous. Surrender is the key. I only have to do this today. Now, I would absolutely love to tell you that in 2014, I got all those things and I never went back. That would have been a really beautiful story and a really short story, but that's not what happened. I came and I shared, and I was in my first pink cloud of joyous, joyous freedom from food obsession, which I'd never had in my entire life. And I chucked it away. I absolutely chucked it away. And if anybody wants to be bored with how that happened, come and find me and I will tell you, because I know really, really clearly why I chucked it away. And since then I've had a hideous amount of relapses, back in, back out, back in. Never left, but back in, back out of relapse, of recovery. 2 and a bit years ago, I'd had another one. I can bore you with the details. And I came to a meeting. I don't know what changed that day, but thank the Lord, it's not the Lord for me, thank that thing for me, that it did change. And I came to a meeting, I realised, I don't know, something changed. I asked the first person that put an S after their name to sponsor me. They said yes. I'm not sure it's somebody I would have chosen, but I'm pretty damn sure she wouldn't have chosen me either. And she asked me to do an absolutely ridiculous thing, which was to put all of the foods that I'm addicted to down. So not some of them, not the ones that I would eat some of the time, but all of them. And to have that honesty and that surrender. And, you know, my big book ones, I'm aware of, you know, my first memories are of me being told off. My sister said, oh, you used to go on about stuff though. You know, I'd get slap legs because I used to go on about stuff. I said, I can guarantee you that it was about food that I was going on about. You know, I'd have been in a day out and somebody would have said, you can have an X when we come out of the museum, and would have come out of the museum and the X place would have been closed, and I'd have lost my little mind, because that was the only thing that was getting me through, right? So my earliest memories are of food. So I knew those big ones, I could put those down. But all the little grey ones around the edges. I was driving to a retreat in one of these many relapses to commit my food to my sponsor at the time. And I drove for about an hour and 20 minutes convincing myself that this one product could stay on my list. An hour and 20 minutes, didn't think about anything else. It's like, no, it'd be fine. Because I can have them, because there was that one time where I did only have one of them, so I can have them. And of course, I couldn't, but the fact that, like, I sat there for an hour and 20 minutes, and I think I did eventually convince myself that that needed to go on the list, but it did. So my sponsor suggested this ridiculous thing, so I started to do that. And the miracle happened, which was the more I surrendered and the more disciplined my food plan, and by discipline, That's a good word to me, structure. The more guidance, not bad things. The more I did that and the more I put down, the more freedom I had. And that's one of those paradoxes of recovery, that the more I stopped, and then I could have more freedom, have more energy, have more time, have more thought, have more tolerance. Still working on that one. But it's just a paradox. And then by putting it down, so, you know, I went on holiday recently with family and I'm just going off to do my call. I'm off to do my step 10 call. And, you know, I'm doing a meeting and somebody's going, oh, you put a lot of time into this, don't you? It's like, so much less time than binging. So much less time. Geez, the planning, where'd you put your wrappers? You know, where do you put your wrappers? I mean, it's a constant conundrum, you know? There's a play area at the top of my road that I used to fill it every week, I think, with the wrappers from my binges on the way home, you know? And I'm going to pop down the co-op and a small child that lived with me, as in my children, over the time that I've been a compulsive overeater, would say, oh, can I come with you, mummy? And I'm like, oh my God, if you have to. Because if you do, I can't eat that crap. Because of course, my kids aren't having that crap, right? Because their bodies are temples. And I mean, they had some of that crap because I didn't want to give them the same things that I had. But they can't have it in the volume that I'm eating. So, you know, so then I'd have to go back down the co-op to get my stuff. And, you know, it's just the amount of time and, you know, and the disgusting things with, you know, I don't know what any of you have done, but I think one of my lowest points, I used to be a chambermaid in a hotel not dissimilar to this. And the first job I did was find the room that had the breakfast delivered to their bedroom. And I'd lock the door and I'd eat the rest of it. And it was some stranger, a lot of football clubs stayed there, like lower league football clubs, so some skanky footballer had probably eaten this meal, and I carried on eating it. I mean, I could afford to go and get something else. All of my babysitting money went on bags of carbs, you know, just all of that stuff, and it just, so a lot, yes, I put a lot of time into my recovery, but it's a lot less than I put into my food. I put a bit of money into my recovery. I treat myself to come in to conventions. But again, geez, how much would I have spent at a takeaway, you know? It's not comparable. So, yes, so basically the paradox of the more I put down, and then what that obviously does, not obviously, I'm sorry, what that does is it clears the channel to my higher power. So then I can see things more clearly and I can pick up on that second bit, as Rita said, which is that my life had been unmanageable. I was the same. I went to a counsellor. It's like, why are you here? Well, I've got a really good job that people pay you well for and say I do well. I've actually got a happy marriage. There's a man that actually loves me, even though I'm crazy. I've got kids. You know, I'm close to my mum. I'm close to my sister. Like, why are you here? I've got good friends. Because I can't stop eating. I can't stop it, and I can I have structure around everything else in my life. And every morning I would wake up, I'd have a wee with a heavy sigh, and I'd feel shit anyway. Sorry, I know it's been recorded, sorry. You know, I'd be thirsty, I wouldn't have slept well, my knees hurt, my back hurt, you know, and I would sit and have a wee and go, today is going to be different. And sometimes I might have made it to lunchtime, but sometimes it was, you know, 8:15 in the morning, I was back on it. And the sadness of that, and this lead chair that I did when I first came in 2014, I found the CD of it in a cupboard a few years ago. And I listened to it. My daughter, who was probably only about 10 at the time, listened to it with me. And I told the story of going into a fast food place and pretending that I had a couple of friends outside, because obviously the volume that I was buying was far too much for one person. And I did all that. Oh, I can't quite remember what she wanted to drink. Just get her that, you know. And this whole charade, which is so embarrassing, because as if that server gave a monkey's what I was having anyway. So again, it's ego. I mean, geez, you know, they're in the middle of a 12-hour shift probably, being paid minimum wage, as if they cared. But I thought they cared. And she just turned to me and said, and I was laughing, and she went, and she went, that's really sad. It's like, actually, that is really sad. It's really sad. And it's a desperately lonely disease as well. You know, I've been in a small cottage, you know, holiday cottage, thank you. Small holiday cottage with my back to the family making their food. You know, got through volumes and I'd turn around and you can't smell it on my breath, you can't see my pupils. You could see it on my body, you can still see it on my body, but you know, I was 20s. Well, I gave up weighing myself around about the 18 stone mark. God knows what I got up to, but I suspect 20, 22 stone. I don't know. I don't know what I did. But it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter because we will never solve the riddle and it doesn't matter. But what I have done through surrendering and through really getting that into my head is I've found the freedom and I can have anything in my house, literally anything. And in fact, the other day I made something for my husband, which was a recipe that his mother used to make. And I thought, do you know what? That would be a really kind thing to do because his mum died a couple of years ago. And I did it out of kindness and I did this thing and it's been in my house. I don't know whether it's left there or not because I haven't looked because it's just not my food and it's in my house and I can go to shops and I can buy it. And I 100% promise you, newcomers and people returning from relapses, there is hope. I never thought I'd get it. I never, ever thought. And I don't think I even believed it when people told me they had it. I think I believed it. I don't want to be that cynical, but maybe I was that cynical. I don't know. I was jealous. I was really jealous. But there is hope, and we just need to do that first thing. We have to do the we, and we just have to get it in our heads. And just if I'm debating whether I can, like Rita said, if I'm debating whether I can have it, then I'm not having it because there's danger there. There is danger there. So. There is hope, there is recovery, there is joy, there is freedom, and it is a marvellous, marvellous programme that I'll bang on about for years. So if you want to be bored, come and find me and I'll tell you more. Thank you. Thanks for having me.